Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Stephan v. Refco. Mr. Bellina.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Steve Molina. I represent the appellant in this case, Robert Stephan, the estate of Ludwig Stephan and Great American Airways. This case is before the court on a review of summary judgment order granted by Judge Gottschall of the Northern District. The district court erred in granting summary judgment in favor of defendant Refco on the basis of the contractual one-year limitation provision in Refco's customer agreement that sought to vary the two-year statute of limitations specified by Congress in Section 25C of the Commodity Exchange Act. The district court also erred in enforcing the contractual choice of forum clause and in awarding damages in favor of Refco on its counterclaim. The district court looked to the Supreme Court's decision in the Order of United Commercial Travelers of America versus Wolf, and consistent with the Eastern District of Virginia decision in MFS International, held that since the Commodity Exchange Act does not contain explicit language precluding the parties from contractually shortening the statute of limitations, and since 1 year is reasonable under Illinois law, Refco's one-year contractual limitations clause is enforceable. In so holding, the district court declined to follow the Northern District decision in Madero versus Refco. In Madero, the courts declined to enforce.
What weight are we supposed to give to district court decisions, Mr. Molina?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What weight should we give a district court decision?
Well, I believe that the district court decision is in this case, there are two district court decisions that are directly at odds with respect to this issue, the one that Judge Gottschall relied on, and Judge Bucklow's decision in Madero. Obviously, the grant of summary judgment here is subject to your de novo review. In Madero, the court declined to enforce Refco's contractual limitations provision, holding that the express limitations provision in the Commodity Exchange Act reflects a strong public policy in favor of that particular limitations period, and permitting the parties to contract around it is contrary to that public policy.
Very strange argument, though, because we think of statute of limitations as protections for defendants and to a lesser extent the court from, you know, stale cases and uncertainty about a person's potential legal liabilities and the like. I've never actually heard of anyone thinking that statute of limitations were somehow for the protection of plaintiffs.
Well, Your Honor, in the Commission's, the CFTC's case, Miguel.
What sense does that make? You could argue that 1 year was too short or that the contract was unconscionable, something of that. So I can understand that argument. I don't see how, mileage you get from the statute of limitations, from the outer limit.
In light of recent developments, Your Honor, the view that statute of limitations provisions are designed solely to protect the defendant.
You can't take recent developments and read them back into statute of limitations enacted many years ago. If you want to argue this is unconscionable, this is fraudulent, that's fine, but I don't see how you get any mileage out of this statutory provision, which obviously wasn't designed with out of, you know, solicitude for plaintiffs.
Well, Your Honor, I would contend that the Commission has spoken exactly to what the limitations provision in the Commodity Exchange Act was.
Well, the Commission has its own view, but that view doesn't come out of anything in the legislative history or the language of the statute of limitations, does it?
Well, the underlying remedial purpose, though, of the Commodity Exchange Act is very clear,
but
that it's to protect investors.
The statute of limitations doesn't have a remedial purpose. It's the opposite.
Well, the Commission sees it otherwise. The Commission sees the statute of limitations
as
embedded.
Well, if it's not remedial, why don't they make it 10 years?
The commission has actually expressed its opinion that 2 years may not be enough.
Fine. Then it's obvious that the commission is talking policy, not interpretation of the statute of limitations. It just it doesn't like the statute of limitations. It thinks it's too short, too favorable to defendants.
Well, in light of recent action by Congress and Sarbanes-Oxley.
Well, that's fine, but recent action by Congress doesn't read back into this statute. They didn't amend the statute of limitations.
I agree. I would contend that in light of Congress's clear purpose to protect investors and its charge to the CFTC to enforce the Commodity Exchange Act.
Why did it set such a short statute of limitations as 2 years if it's those solicitors for investors?
Well, they have to set a limit, and they...
But for example, the standard limit on suit on a contract is 10 years. So it looks as if Congress is less solicitous of investors than it is of parties to written contracts.
Well, I would assume that Congress balanced a variety of concerns when it elected the 2-year provision in the Commodity Exchange Act. Recent developments indicate that Congress believes that 1 year in the context of complex securities fraud is clearly not enough, and the committee notes to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act make it very clear that Congress was concerned that the 1 year provision applicable to securities fraud cases is not enough, and that in complex cases it is simply not enough time, suggesting that protection of investors is one of the matters to be taken into consideration. 1 month after Judge Gottschall rendered her opinion in this case, the commission did address this issue in the McGough versus Bradford case.
I understand. These are wealthy people, and this one-year business and the forum, that's all prominently displayed. Don't these people have lawyers?
My client did not have a lawyer sit down and review this agreement prior to its execution, Your Honor.
And in fact, very prudent, is it?
Well, in fact, the commission in the McGough case addressed this issue and said that the commission's experience shows that many futures customers are comparably unsophisticated about the market, and specifically...
But these people aren't, are they?
Indeed they are, Your Honor. They had experience in running an airline,
But someone who runs an airline, for goodness sake, is certainly a sophisticated business person. I don't understand that.
Well, I would contend, Your Honor, that the commission's finding that market participants such as my client are relatively unsophisticated.
Well, what do you mean such as your client? Have they discussed big businessmen who foolishly enter the futures market and don't consult their lawyer and sign dumb documents? Is that what they've talked about?
Your Honor, even if my client had spoken to an attorney, he would have no way of knowing that the fraud that would soon be perpetrated upon him was actually taking place prior to the execution.
The lawyer could say, you know, I don't like this 1 year. I need more than one. My clients need more than 1 year.
Well, the commission also addressed that issue, Your Honor, and found that competitive market pressures would make the notion that these terms could be bargained over ineffective, and that...
Well, I was curious about your view of competition. So your view is that if one firm reduces the quality of its product, all its competitors will follow suit?
My contention is that if the courts uphold a provision...
You didn't answer my question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If one firm in a competitive market lowers the quality of its product, will competition compel the others to follow suit?
Presumably it would.
Now, wait a second. So that must mean that the quality of American products is constantly diminishing? Until finally they're selling empty boxes?
No.
That's your argument.
I think my argument...
Well, you just said if one firm lowers its quality, all its competitors will follow suit. That leads to a zero quality equilibrium, doesn't it?
Your Honor, I would suggest...
Well, that's what you said. You want to retract that?
Perhaps I do. The competition here is to...
So REFCO lowers its reduces the limitations period to 1 year. So by your logic, one of its competitors should lower the period to 6 months.
Well, actually, it's the
last. Then everyone will follow suit. Then the next guy lowers it to 3 months and get down to 1 minute.
My point, the point made.
Well, what's to stop that?
If the courts were to uphold the shortening of the contractual limitations provision, then I would assume Your Honor is correct.
Oh, so in other words, if we affirm, we're going to end up with a 1 minute contractual limitation in this industry.
I would say that I don't know, Your Honor, whether or not the firms would compete to a zero time limitation. I do know that the Commission, based on its experience in this area, has indicated that competitive market pressures will force other competitors to have that same clause. But there is no bargaining power over these types of clauses in the contracts of adhesion that
you
we're talking about.
You don't think wealthy people like the Stevens can't negotiate with these futures merchants?
The Commission believes
they want their business, don't they?
The Commission believes that market participants, whether they're wealthy or not, do not have equal bargaining power.
Really, you think if Bill Gates wants to go into the futures market and REFCO says, well, you know, they have to sue within 1 year, and Gates says, no, I want 2 years, you think they'd refuse because he has no bargaining power, even though he's...
I don't know. I don't know the answer to...
REFCO 10 times over? Does that sound sensible to you?
I don't know whether, in the case of Bill Gates, REFCO would see its way to negotiate out of or away from this provision.
Don't you have to argue that the shorter time is unreasonable?
The Commission...
It's competition stuff. Obviously, that's a longer statute of limitations, from your client's point of view, would be the more attractive for the customer. I'm just saying, why is it 1 year unreasonable, especially when for several years there, what I would at least label very substantial losses. Maybe that didn't attract their attention, but it would certainly attract most people. Why would 2 years have helped them? Because they were losing this kind of money, or at least a lot of money, for a lot of years.
To unravel the fraud at issue, Your Honor, and REFCO's role in it was exceedingly difficult, and one that couldn't be done within a year. One doesn't normally suspect the clearing firm of being a participant in this type of commodities fraud. In this case, as I indicated earlier, the fraud actually preceded the first transaction at issue. The first trade in our account was a trade allocated to us from another customer. Yet the trading con firm gave no indication to us, or the monthly account statement, or the year-end statement, that we were being allocated trades from other customers. My clients were willing to accept losses that might result from market movement, not losses that would result from other customers' trades being allocated to our account.
Is there anything they did within the one-year time that would be actionable?
My client did speak to an attorney who couldn't unravel this and wasn't sure what to do with it. And that is in the record. As the Commission has found, 1 year in the context of these types of cases is frequently not enough to figure out the complexities of this fraud or fraud in general. And as Congress has indicated in the context of securities fraud, that there's really no reason to distinguish between the two, 1 year is simply not enough to figure out who the participants are in the fraud, what their respective roles might be. We submit that the Commission's findings, that the policy statements made in McGow versus Bradford, are subject or should be accorded deference under the Chevron case, that the one-year provision is not enforceable, and that these types of contractual provisions they impermissibly interfere with the statutory scheme that Congress laid out in the Commodity Exchange Act. They also cause, in this case, remedial inequalities that are hard to reconcile with with Congress's intent. If one goes to the reparations forum, it's a 2-year statute of limitations. If one goes to arbitration before the NFA, it's a 2-year statute of limitations. If one comes before the federal court, there may be a 1-year limitations provision because that contract might be upheld. Similarly, the interpretation of the Exchange Act that RESCO asks...
Your time has expired, Mr. Molina.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hanbury?
May it please the Court, one factual point I would like to make at the outset is that when the plaintiffs in the case knew that Mr. Goldinger had wrongfully caused their losses, when they did file, they filed that REFCO had employed Mr. Goldinger as an agent. So the agency theory would have popped up at the first instant. They knew or should have known that Mr. Goldinger was doing something that was causing their losses to be wrongfully caused. Sorry. Basically, plaintiffs are asking you to invalidate contracts that they freely entered into. In attacking the lower court's opinion, they're asking you basically to make 3 distinctions, one between contract law and tort law, another distinction between federal policy and state policy as far as limitations, and between general statutes of limitations and specific statutes of limitations, whatever that is. In order to make any of these distinctions, the court will have to overrule Cange. It will also have to undermine another ruling of this court, Taylor versus Western and Southern, and it will simply have to ignore the Wolf opinion from the Supreme Court of the United States. They argue that the Wolf rule is narrow and doesn't apply because it only applies to contract. They cite a lot of cases coming from contracts, which is not surprising because in order to have a contractual limitation period, you have to have a contract. But they're wrong in limiting Wolf to that because, as we cited in our brief, a number of cases have applied similar language to cover torts and have also, for example, the First Circuit in the Jimenez case upheld a legend on the back of a ticket in a case involving a personal injury suit against a cruise line. And this court upheld in Cange a contractual limitation in the face of the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, which has a 5-year limitation period. So it would be very difficult for this court to get to where the plaintiffs want to be without overruling Cange and also without enshrining a difference between federal policy and state policy as far as limitations.
Could I ask you a question about the other issue in the case, this attorney's fees? I assume it's attorney's fees?
Primarily, yes.
You interpret the forum provision to forbid them to institute a suit anywhere except Chicago.
In Chicago, yes, sir.
But there's an alternative reading, which is that it's a removal provision, so that wherever they institute suit, you can remove if you want, and they can't object. You can remove it to Chicago. But why would it be more than that? I mean, suppose they instituted suit somewhere, it wasn't Chicago, and you liked it. You thought that would be fine. You thought they'd made a mistake, and that'd be a great forum in which to litigate with them.
I presume we could waive the privilege of removing it or
right.
Move to dismiss.
Okay, but that means that their action merely in instituting the case in a different form is not a violation of the provisions. Only if you decide to remove to Chicago and they fight that, then they're violating the provision. Isn't that so?
I would agree that the provision itself would give us the right to waive it, but the provision itself specifically requires that any action be first filed here. That does not give them the right to do something just because we might later on waive it. It's the same principle as having a statute of limitations. They can waive that, but they can't extend it. We couldn't agree to have it extended. So
but unless they're able to institute the suit in the distant form, you'd never be in a position to waive it. So
that's
in a way you'd lose an option, right?
Well, we could always change the contract if we wanted to have the option of being sued anywhere we wanted to, but the firm prefers to be sued here where its home base is, where all the records are, where many of the witnesses undoubtedly would be. That's why contracts are contracts. But just because we may have the right to waive it does not necessarily give the other side the right to require us to waive it or even give us the option. As a matter of fact, if they wanted to sue somewhere else, presumably they could call up and ask, do you mind being sued in Reno, Nevada? Very likely we would say no, but that does not give them the right to go to Reno, Nevada, cause us to have to go there. Plus, they did fight removal, and we had a briefing schedule, and that's where the costs come from.
With regard to contracts, I just wanted to focus on one other thing. As far as variation in the industry, do all of them, contracts like this, do they all have their own statute of limitations? Is there a common, do some who want to entice more customers have longer statute of limitations?
Your Honor, I couldn't speak to all of them. I can speak to several of them. I would not go so far as the CFTC did in speculating as to that. I do think that that a lot of firms do have a one-year period in them. A lot don't. A lot have changed their clause, as have we, to take into account the fact that the CFTC says that in reparations, if you come here, you can't have less than the 2 years. So there have been some changes to deal with that particular happenstance. But I don't think I can say that everyone has a 1 year. I can say that a lot do. But 1 year, the reason that the 1 year is there is because this court and Illinois courts and courts in New York and all over this country have found that 1 year is an appropriate length of time. And it is not unreasonably short. As a matter of fact, the plaintiffs didn't even argue at the district level. They didn't put in their initial brief here that the 1 year was unreasonably short. And it was only when we called the court's attention to the fact that they had not done that that they entered into some type of argument in their reply brief. But simply put, Section 25 of the Commodity Exchange Act sets an outer limit on any type of case that can be brought under the Commodity Exchange Act, whether it's fraud in its various forms, whether it's against the NFA for in bad faith refusing to enforce the rules, against the Chicago Board of Trade. It even has a cause of action against brokers for failing to properly keep customer funds separate from their own operating funds. So it's a general statute of limitations that sets an outside limit. And in Wolf, the Supreme Court said this is perfectly acceptable if the 1 year, if the statute, if the contractual limitations is reasonable. Now, let me make one statement, too, about the McGaugh opinion from the CFTC. Even in that opinion, they recognized, first of all, that the people who generally go into reparations are not as sophisticated as others. They did say that in other forums, such as in court, there may be other rules if there were appropriate safeguards. And the appropriate safeguard that this court and courts across the land have put in is that the limitation period has to be reasonable. It can be shorter than the statute, but it must be reasonable.
Is the reparations remedy more limited than the judicial remedy?
That was my next point, Your Honor. The reparations, this demand for consistency ignores the fact that there are huge differences. The primary difference between reparations and arbitrations on the one hand and being in court is in court you can have depositions. You can find things out. In reparations, there are no depositions. There's an extremely limited number of interrogatories that one can ask. And in arbitration, it's even more limited. So there may be some policy provision there that might justify that, but in this case, it's just totally unnecessary because the safeguards are here. In their reply brief, they set up a little example that I wanted to use, because when they use the example of this court ordering a briefing schedule, their observation on that entirely misses the point. You can order Mr. Molina to file, whether you say at any time, within, no later than. Typically, you just say on a particular date. But let's say that you've ordered Mr. Molina to file a brief on February 20th. And I call him and I say, Mr. Molina, I've got to go out of town on the 19th. And I'm going to be out. Could you please? And he might, in his generosity, agree to file on the 19th so I could have a copy of his brief to take with me. That would not interfere in this court's business at all. You would still have your brief on the 20th. I would still file mine 10 days later. And that's precisely the situation that this court has observed in other cases, in concurrences and in cases decided across the country, that as long as it's a reasonable limitation period, there is no reason that it cannot be shortened unless it interferes in the operations of the statute. But that's not the case here. This is not an exculpatory clause. This is not an agreement between the parties that REFCO doesn't have to abide by the CFTC regulations. This is not an agreement that the Commodity Exchange Act imposition of respondent superior liability does not apply. It just simply does not fit into that category. The plaintiffs use the uninsured motorist provision as an example of public policy. And that illustrates why that public policy could be argued in certain circumstances. The uninsured motorist requires, the uninsured motorist contract there had a 2-year limitation period in it. The court struck that down because they said the uninsured motorist legislation was intended to put the parties in exactly the position they would be in had the person who committed the tort had the insurance he was required to have. If he had had the insurance, very likely there would not be a contract between the injured person and the insured person limiting it to 2 years. So it just didn't fit into that rubric. But once again, this is not the case here. We simply have a general outside limit of 2 years, and there's nothing in the statute. Wolf says, controlling statute to the contrary. There's nothing anywhere in the Commodity Exchange Act that says that or even implies it. It's not in the legislative history anywhere. But even at that, I would argue that Wolf says there should be a controlling statute to the contrary. And the very formulation of Wolf that says you can, if you have a statute of limitations, you can have a shorter one unless there is a controlling statute to the contrary. That construct in Wolf means that just because there is a federal statute doesn't mean you can't shorten it. And in Taylor versus Western, this court observed that the federal policy on limitations is very much like that of the state of Illinois and presumably states across the country, and that it is focused on reasonableness and definiteness. 1 year has been held everywhere to be reasonable, and we submit that this one should be upheld as well. Plaintiffs go further and say that you're bound by the CFTC opinion. And in our brief, we have demonstrated why Chevron deference isn't warranted in this situation, primarily because CFTC didn't even speak to Section 25. It only talked in terms of its own reparations program. Secondly, because the federal court had the exclusive jurisdiction over Section 25 of the Commodity Exchange Act. Obviously, the Commodity Exchange Act is administered by the CFTC, but it's also administered in part by the SEC, in part by the Federal Reserve, and, in the case of Section 25, by the district courts.
The other courts that you refer to as far as reasonableness, is that an objectively reasonable, or does it matter how sophisticated the parties are, case by case?
To me, Your Honor, the reading I give it is that it's based on the length of time, 1 year. And that seems to be fairly consistent in the cases that I've read. 1 year is a reasonable period of time to have a contractual limitation period. Now, there were some that were shorter, but it depended a lot on the circumstances of each case as far as what the statute said. If the statute said 6 months, then 90 days might be considered reasonable. But typically 1 year is the reasonable length of time, and that's what we find in this. So basically we're back to Wolf. The Wolf case says if it's a reasonable contractual limitation period, it's permitted even though there's a statute, unless there's a controlling statute to the contrary. And there simply is not that here. I thank the court and ask the court.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hanbury. Mr. Lee, your time expired, but if you'd like a minute for rebuttal, we'll give it to you.
Your Honor, if I could just address briefly Mr. Hanbury's comments on the application of the Wolf case. This case is not a case on the contract. This is a case where the clients were seeking to enforce their rights under the Commodity Exchange Act. This is not a case where there is a general statute of limitations at issue, such as the Illinois 10-year statute of limitations applicable to all contracts. The statute here was created as part of the specific statutory remedy laid out for the private right of action under the Commodity Exchange Act. And Wolf said that the period of time has to be reasonable. And we've laid out in our brief why there is reason to believe that the 1 year is no longer considered reasonable in light of the McGough opinion, in light of legislation like Sarbanes-Oxley.
Do all the commodities firms have this 1 year limitation?
Like Mr. Hanbury, I can't say that all of them do. I believe many of them have this provision. I believe it's fairly common, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much to both parties.
Thank you.
Next case for